That's fantastic.
Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know why this is.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week. And you're listening to Realty Universal Radio. And as usual, the hour is going to fly by. You know how we love to have, for those of you that have already listened to our show many, many times, the agents and brokers and our repeat clients and customers, and just have such, I love this internet, being able to do this and have people download the show from all over, and it's just so much fun. Those of you that know us know that we try to tie in the real estate, self-help, why we do this, giving back, et cetera, and today is going to be no different. We are going to have Cass Rose is founder of RentMyWay.com. She's going to join us today to tell us why we should cooperate with our competition and how to take the fear out of building your brand and business your way. She incorporates all, the self-help, the caring, building your dreams. Just an amazing, amazing woman, and I'm so excited to have her on today. I know we're going to fly by. She's also the author of How Do Successful Entrepreneurs Overcome Fear and Critics to Build Great Companies. Successful Seattle entrepreneur, she'll share her revolutionary way to answer this question by revealing it within this new book. We're going to be blessed to have some tidbits today as well. Cassandra Rose is also so successful, and she lives outside of Seattle. She founded Rent My Way after the real estate housing crash left countless uprooted homeowners wondering where their next homes would be. Hearing their stories compelled her to find solutions using the untapped potential of rental properties. Her brainstorm resulted in a new online management tool for landlords, property managers, and renters. Rent My Way assists all parties involved in matching inventory to clients' needs. A salesperson at heart, we're going to hear about that too and how she got started. Cass has been active in businesses such as auto sales, real estate, using these opportunities to fast forward and study tens and thousands of people actively making buy-in decisions in other industries. By her mid-20s, she was already a proven businesswoman, and now as an author, she wants to share her knowledge and pass it forward. She believes in a balanced life, falling deeper in love with her two sons and diving into adventure, and her romantic partner and his son, along with their new puppy. At any given time, you'll find her traveling the world, totally immersing herself in foreign cultures, exotic foods, spiritual arts, and music, always living in the moment, though. She believes life's an endless adventure of self-discovery, self-actualization, and constant evolution. Helping others navigate the path of not knowing to all knowing is one of her true joys. So without further ado, I'd love to welcome Cass Rose. How you doing?
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm doing fantastic.
I just, you tell me you're out skiing this weekend or getting ready to or in the middle of the week here.
I am. I just took a run right before I jumped on to do this radio show with you. I'm in beautiful Sun Valley, Idaho today, and about 8,000 feet above sea level right now.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So, I want to ask you a lot. I have a lot of questions to ask you today because you really do tie in everything you walk your talk. You tie in everything that you're doing. And we want to get, I want to get into your book too, and kind of break down some of that of why you wrote it and what you're doing. But before that, could you tell us a little bit about your background? We were talking on the phone last week. It was so interesting. So can you just kind of tell us like how you got into different sales and what brought you to this point that you're at now?
Sure. Thank you for asking. Like many people that I've met in my sales career, I was not born into opportunity. I had to create my own opportunity. I was on my own at the age of 15 and quickly realized I needed to find skills in order to start creating a life that I would dream about and eventually manifest into reality. I had the opportunity to start selling cars at the age of 18. I answered an ad in the newspaper that said, no experience necessary and women encouraged to apply. And it was in that moment
wow.
that I realized I had those two skills. I had no experience and I was a woman. So I walked into a car dealership up in Bellingham, Washington at the age of 18, and they hired me on the spot, and that would begin my 12-year career in the automobile industry.
Fantastic. So that, what did you, 12 years, that's a long time to stay in at the time.
Well, what happened is I started learning how to make money. So I've been 100% commission my entire life. I think a couple times I've convinced somebody to give me a salary, but most of the time it was hand to mouth. If I performed, I got paid. And if I didn't perform or I took time off, I wasn't getting paid. So I learned how to work, 10, 12 hour days for, I would say, a couple decades. And now I'm at a place where my businesses are running themselves and, I'm able to go skiing on a Wednesday on Valentine's Day with the people I love and,
wonderful.
And not have my businesses skip a beat. But that was a couple decades in the making.
Took a while to get you. So you run a lot of things virtually as well?
I do. By the time I was 21 years old, I was able to become a finance manager at a car dealership. So what that means is I was the person pulling your credit, determining whether or not a bank would take your loan. And so that was a pretty cool skill set to get at a young age. And by the time, I want to say like 23, I was making a six-figure income. So when you say, boy, you stayed in the auto industry quite a while, honestly, I didn't know any other way to make six figures at that age with no college degree.
That's fantastic. That's really, yeah. No, it's a good industry. It's a long time to stay in, I think, based on getting in and you just grew with it. And that's, so tell us, and then from there, you had any other positions before getting into the real estate or what? What brought
you
into?
So about the age of 30, I realized if I wasn't the daughter of or the wife of an owner, I most likely was never going to get a car dealership, and I had hit my ceiling. There were no more advancements, and basically I was told just to sit in my office, look pretty, and make other people money, and I had a problem with that.
Really?
I knew I was an entrepreneur. I was watching the .com rise and fall during that time. I was reading branding and marketing books. I was self-educating, if you will, between car deals and imagining a better life outside of what I thought was a bit of a prison. Every day I walked in, it started to feel like a prison. And I honestly wasn't being very nice anymore. If somebody asked me for something very simple, I noticed I was snapping at people. And it was just time. It was time for me to move on. But that meant I had to reinvent myself. So at the age of 30, I started looking into real estate. I figured, okay, if I can sell, the second most valuable asset or depreciating asset, but the second
right.
most valuable product, then I might as well try houses. The one thing with me, though, is I'm a bit of a nonconformist. Cheers to that. And I really had a hard time picturing myself as a traditional real estate agent because I saw, when I went into the industry, I saw a lot of not so authentic people, maybe people wearing masks or versions of themselves that they were portraying to the world. And I had this calling that I really wanted to be me. I really wanted to be authentic. And that meant with all my flaws and all my edginess and my little foul mouth that I inherited from the car dealership, you know, I didn't want to be somebody other than me. And reinventing myself. Yeah, thank you. Reinventing myself in real estate was no easy feat, but I did find my next home in the foreclosure industry. So I was able to team up with the number one foreclosure group in Seattle at the time, and this was right before the housing crisis happened. So there was a lot of opportunity for me to start making a difference in an industry that was yet to be as well known as it is today.
That's fantastic. So you got into the foreclosure. Were you doing the rentals and the foreclosure, or were you kind of mixing it in, or?
Yeah. So basically, I closed a deal on the hood of a car, a rental property. I closed it on the hood of a car. Back then, we had paper applications, and one of the foreclosure representatives was an investor, but he was cleaning up his yard, and he was observing me close a rental for him. And he goes, "Cassandra, I have never seen anybody close a real estate transaction like that." And I said, "I go, hey, man,
in
it's
the
80s. The glue."
That's cool.
Yeah, I go in the car business, we called it getting the glue. So if you got people to sign on the dotted line and give you some cash, we knew that we had an opportunity to move you forward. And he said, "You know, I want to introduce you to these foreclosure guys. I think they'll really like you." So I did that. I went over to that group, and they said, "Listen, we want you to start a leasing department for us and a lease option department. And then you can help the mom and pops that are at the foreclosures." Not all of them were flippers. A lot of them were buying and holding. And so I became their buy and hold resource.
Fantastic. So you were doing, you were tying in. Tell us a little bit how that worked. Was it when the economy changed? Well, in 2008-09, things changed. Were you finding a lot more people were going to rent because of that, or what happened?
Yeah, so I built this department from the ground up. Honestly, I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I joined like a local rental housing association. I started asking questions, gathering resources. Technology was a lot different back then. So we were doing paper move-in reports. Now we have apps for that. So times were a little different back then, but what I noticed at the foreclosure auctions back then, and part of it was my self-esteem was a little bit lower than it is today. I didn't know what I didn't know. So when the big egos walked through the door, often I would have to duck to avoid them.
Sure.
And they filled the room, and they were the big investors, and I was the little order taker waitress that just needed to manage their properties. And I played that role for a while.
And that's all of us, I think, and when we first are getting into things, and even later sometimes, because we want to still be humble, right? You know, that kind of thing that just happens. Yeah, that's really
good.
Man,
I was just happy. I was just happy I wasn't at a car dealership. So I was willing to take a little bit of emotional abuse in order to prove myself. And I agree with you. I think in the beginning, what we're trying to do is prove to ourselves and then prove to others that we're worthy and we know what the hell we're doing. And so,
Yeah, and even after you do, though, years later, then you start to go, wait a minute, do I really deserve this? Sometimes it just depends. It's part of being human, you know, but go ahead. Yeah, but the egos, I mean, I cannot tell you how many times in these industries where I went, oh, my gosh, take a balloon and pop it, you know, and then somebody can say that about any of us, too, because, and unfortunately, in real estate, you have to market and show, I've sold this many, I've done this many, and then a lot of people can think we all have egos because of that, right? So it's a double-edged sword, and it's very difficult. So I commend what you've done. So then what happened? You kind of, with the changes,
so,
you said, okay,
so
we got to do
this. This was before the housing or the housing, or let's say the foreclosure boom and the housing crash, right? So what was happening is all these egos were buying all this inventory, and they were actually jamming renters into the property on lease options, because properties in the Seattle area were going up 12%, 20% and more per year. And so what they were doing is they were actually banking on the renter not being able to buy the house later. And it was an evil mess that I was watching, and I didn't agree with it. And I started to kind of step out on my own and let people know that, you know, it wasn't right. Then the housing crash happens, right? And now
right.
I watch half of America go into foreclosure. Now, a lot of those
right.
Investors with big egos, they started pop, 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 and they came to me humble and said, Cassandra, will you just do anything to help me? I'm about to lose my,
right?
Right? And I was like, well, welcome. Come here. Yes, I will help you. But the one thing that never changed was my integrity, right? So the housing market
That's
would
fantastic.
Peak and valley and peak and valley. And I just kept trucking along, doing the best I could do to offer the best services in a fair and equitable way to all parties. You know,
right.
what happened was when I started going to the foreclosure auctions and I watched, you know, it's in the newspapers. Everybody knows that people are filing bankrupt and they're all going into foreclosure. We all know that a lot of those renters should have never been put in home loans anyway. So these people were not prepared
right.
to be homeowners. Now they're destroyed by the economy and
oh.
they didn't have any resources. They were in pain.
Right.
I watched thousands of families get displaced. And so I went up to my investment group and I said, you guys, I go, what about all those people that are like crying and losing their minds and getting divorces and falling into addiction? I'm like, what are we going to do to help them? And they would literally look at me and kind of chuckle and go, we don't care, Cass. Did you see that property? We're going to make
horrible.
A lot of money. And it
horrible.
Was horrible. And
yeah.
I felt like I was on an island. Like, can anybody hear me? Like, what the
yeah.
hell is going on? And so what I did is I started running ads because the investors are still giving me their properties to rent out. So I started running ads that said, do you have less than perfect credit? Were you affected by the, you know, the foreclosure disruption? Did you have a short sale? Call me. I'll still help you. And that's when I knew I was onto something. And that's when Rent My Way was born. My phone and my email started flooding with people
wow.
with really, really good jobs, right? But calling up and
mm-hmm.
to pull from Brené Brown, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Brené Brown, but all of a sudden people wanted to talk to me about shame, blame, and fear. You know, they were
right.
they were living
it,
in a
it was
seat.
Very
they,
right.
Go ahead.
It was hard for people to realize they had no choice, but it was just a very horrible situation to go through.
They were sick, right? So basically, I could narrow it down to about 12 different type of situations, whether it was divorce, abandonment by their family, because, you know, when people are put in tough situations, they act in odd behaviors. And I watched people fall into addictions. I watched all types of things happen. And basically, I just said to people, what I realized is I didn't physically have enough hours in the day to listen to every single person's unique story. So
sure.
what I did is
sure.
I started hanging out in the tech community. I found a moonlighter who would work, you know, after hours and start building what I like to call a lean startup. I read the book by Eric Rice, Lean Startup, which was don't go out
yeah.
and raise $1 million, build something and find out nobody wants it. You know, build a little bit, even if it's not sexy, even if it's not as pretty as you want it, build it, see if people like it. And so
right.
we did a free profile where you could tell your story without, you know, shame and blame and fear. I gave them a safe, sacred spot to just kind of reveal where they were at in that moment. And then I started being the optimistic person that said, you know what, this is temporary. This is not going to be forever. We're going to make it through this. And
right.
I started using words like we're going to do this together. And people, they started turning to me and saying, nobody's ever talked to me this way. Like, I don't know. I didn't
Fantastic.
Know that there was even help out there. And so, yeah, it felt good. You know, that's where the feel good part of making money started to happen. And, to this date, I've now had over 6,000 renters across the United States fill out profiles, and just recently I started integrating some new slick technology platform or tools for people to use. But it's been a long way coming. I had to reinvent myself while I'm going through this because the foreclosure industry started to prove to be just as toxic as the auto industry. I was being marginalized. I was, you know, it's male dominated, good old boy club. They're not going to help Cassandra succeed. And in fact, the better I did and the more money I made, the more that my own team members started shutting me out and not including me and shutting me down.
That's
when I really started losing.
Yeah, I
started losing my mind a little bit because it didn't make sense. I was like, wait a minute. So you hired me to do an awesome job. I did an awesome job, and now I'm in trouble? Like, make that make sense to me, guys. And again, it was back to, you know, look pretty, do your job, but don't make any waves, and only speak when spoken to. And I had a problem with that again. Now I'm in my 30s. Same problem I had in my 20s. I'm like, shit, I got to go reinvent myself again.
Right, and you kept the heart. You kept the heart, though, because we see that a lot with high interest loans, right? Shark loans, et cetera, and seconds, and a lot of situations where people are getting into something and they're not going to make it. You know, there's when you can see they're not going to make it, and it's putting people into things that aren't good to put them into. And I'm just, my hat's off to you to keep the integrity and pull away from that. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just like people that are rebuilding their lives or building it for the first time, we've also got first-time homeowners and, you know, millennials now, right? So anytime you go from not knowing, like I don't know what to do, towards all knowing, you need lots of resources. You need lots of support. And what I like to call in my new book, micro shifts. Little tiny micro shifts in your thinking and in your actions eventually add up to a lot. And so what I had to do is I had to break away from the toxicity that was trying to keep me in chaos and was trying to keep me sick and was trying to pull me down and go, okay, I got to find the strength once again to go reinvent myself. And that was the best blessing I could have ever done. I ended up starting my own property management company. I, you know, got my managing or my designated broker's license. I own my own real estate company. And what I realized is you can't take that away from me anymore. So it wasn't easy. It didn't happen overnight. It happened over a couple decades. But today I own a business with amazing employees that love their job, that do not walk on eggshells like I used to walk on eggshells. We have hula hoops and yoga mats and, you know, we laugh and high five and go to music concerts together because at the end of the day, I want to enjoy this ride. I like making money, but not at the expense of happiness. And I wanna be able to create really positive, joyful experiences for myself and for others, and then have the byproduct be money. And I find
love it.
When you
do
don't
something
meet,
unique. Yeah, go ahead. I'm
yeah.
Sorry. I was gonna.
Well, when
you
know,
do something
you don't
unique
lead
with your
with
employees,
greed,
right?
Yeah. When you don't lead with greed, the money always follows.
Absolutely. You do something unique with your employees by offering a Wellness Wednesday. What is that, and why should more businesses consider making it available?
Yeah, I hired a gal out of my yoga teacher training. I went through a process of self-actualization and became certified yoga teacher just so I could apply
good for you.
The yoga teaching to business, not so that I could teach people at a hot yoga studio, but so that I could take the ancient wisdom and pass it down in a new way of thinking. And so one of my employees, she just wanted to create a day where we weren't working for an hour or two and we do arts and crafts. We, depending on
really?
What season or what reason, we make art together and we paint together. And, you know, she's got all types of, we'll do dream catchers. We'll invite our vendors, our plumbers, anybody who happens to be able to sneak away for a couple hours. And it's just an hour or two of connection and just being real. And then when art time's over, we all go back to work. But it's kind of like doing a group meditation of sorts.
That I read something like that in the Go Giver book by Bob Berg years ago, where they actually they're fictional stories of where people they had the people go in and finger paint and do other things and just to get creative. And it was like, wow, what is that? That's a great idea. Are your offices brick and mortar, or are they mainly virtual, or do people meet at certain times?
We have a brick and mortar, and that's by choice because everybody who does the day in, day out likes to see each other. But we are moving towards more virtual. One of my employees has traveled to Thailand twice in her first 2 years of being employed with me. And what I did is I said, when you go there, I want you to play with what does it feel like to do your job virtually on a 12, 16-hour time difference. And the first time was a little awkward for her. The second time, she nailed it. Mm-hmm. She was able to follow up with all her leads. She was able to keep everything going, and no one even knew she was out of the country. So I want people to enjoy this shared economy and look at this business that I've built for us as an opportunity for us to grow. And honestly, I don't want them to go away. Turnover costs too much. So how do I feed their soul and how do I celebrate their unique talents and their desires, right? Like, if you desire to travel, how do I get to support that desire and not try to block that desire, which is what I always encountered. People wanted to block what made me unique instead of celebrating it.
I love it. And then, a lot of the business, the rentals, you have a lot of real estate brokers or smaller mom-and-pop brokerages that are afraid of doing property management because of the liability, and you seem to thrive in that venue of doing property management, right? You find that that's – tell us how that works so you feel it's more consistent.
Yeah, so remember, I don't like conformity, so everybody was becoming a real estate agent, and I just didn't want to compete with everybody. So I looked at property management, and really there wasn't a lot of competition in property management, and I found that the people who weren't really comfortable with selling became property managers, right? There was this comfort of having this guaranteed income every month. And so I'm a salesperson through and through. So I brought the tenacity I learned from the auto industry, and I applied it to property management. And I actually run it like a car dealership, parts sales service. We have maintenance, leasing, and customer care. It's the same thing. But what I do is I departmentalize it and allow each person to do what they do really well. And then it's not hard. I think it can be a little bit more difficult when you do portfolio managers and you try to have one person be a marketing person, a credit approval, speak with the landlords, and do maintenance. I mean, that's a lot for one individual.
So you do it more as a team,
we pass it off.
And then they have different. That makes sense. You had mentioned to me before about something you're doing with their credit, right? You're set up with the applications, you're doing something that kind of fine tunes it or makes it easier for people to get in.
With the application. Because of working with the foreclosure industry and then starting my own property management company, we've actually closed over 4,000 single family home leases in Washington State. That's a lot of transactions. And in order to close 4,000 transactions, we're pulling tens of thousands of applications, right? And what I found is that when you pull an application, most people don't know what they don't know again. And, again, there's this opportunity to take someone from not knowing to all knowing. So instead of me pulling their credit and telling them yes or no, you're approved or you're declined, with no reasoning behind it, Rent My Way, which is my national startup, we have actually incorporated portable tenant screening, which allows the tenant to pull their own credit. And then when the tenant pulls their own credit, criminal eviction, they get to see what we all get to see. And now they get to stand in their power and go, oh my God, I didn't see that collection on there. I better take care of it. Or, yep, my credit is in a mediocre place, but at least let me give some explanation behind it when I fill out my application. So instead of just blindly filling out applications and taking whatever results the other person analyzing them is doing, I'm actually putting the power back into the people.
Do you send them a link and they just go in, or you just say, go bring us, give us your report first?
Well, so this is all part of the portable tenant screening that we integrated with TransUnion, one of the three major credit bureaus. And essentially what they do is they get their own reports, and then they can share it with as many landlords and property managers as they choose for up to 30 days.
I love it.
So,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's gonna
that
save
is so
them
good.
A ton of money on application fees alone, right?
Do you know one of the – one of the things that brings to my mind is, because we've always done sales and not done the property management except for, you know, our own properties, right, et cetera. And, but I've heard horror stories from people renting before saying, hey, you know, I put my application in and they wanted a, you know, $50 fee or $25 or $100 fee to put my application in, and they're not accepting me, but they're not giving me the fees back. Is that something that how does that mean? So if they run this, do you have to? You still charge a fee to review it, or how does that work? Because I'm hearing a lot of stories about that on the.
It's a one-time fee, and I'm glad that we are recording this, because I do believe that portable screening and the ability to be able to take control over your own credit file will be.
Exactly.
Normal in 3 to 5 years, right? In 3 to 5 years, this will be
good.
Normal, right? I'm a little ahead of the game. Even TransUnion said, you're a little ahead of the game. I'm not the only one doing it, but that's good. I'm a pioneer.
That's very good. Right.
And so ideally what will happen, and it'll take some time, people are going to say, well, who's rent my way? Why should I trust them? So I'm going to have to be a top-notch salesperson and show people why I'm a valuable screening resource, but eventually, you should only have to pay one fee and be able to shop it around instead of paying everybody else's fee, and you're dead in the water once you pay the money. And no, they're not going to refund you because it costs money to pull credit.
Right, but it sounds like I've heard some different stories. That's really, but you're making the people accountable, and you're getting them because we saw a lot of people that were so depressed and, like you said, got into addictions or depression, all kinds of things when the short sales were happening, right? And people, the foreclosures, when the market turned in 08 and 09, and I personally had done, you know, for people, I mean, on the brokerage side, did a lot of short sales, and you would hear the psychology and them feeling like, look, I've always paid my bills, I can't believe this happened. To me, you know, and people just kind of going down the rabbit hole, and you have to pull them out saying, hey, this is temporary, this wasn't your fault, this is something that will pass, right? And you get a lot of that. I really love what you're doing to give the people accountability and realize, you know, hey, things happen, mistakes happen, that doesn't make you a bad person, because we see a lot of that in our industry, you know, where they aren't.
I love that you brought up accountability, because that's my number one claim to fame. And it makes people uncomfortable, right? Because when you are accountable, think about it, it's a two-way street or a scale that's in balance. I refer to it in my book as Lady Justice. Lady Justice represents our judicial system, right? And she's blindfolded, which means in blinded trust. And her sword is facing down, which means it's not a fight. And she's holding a scale, which means inequality and balance. So accountability on all sides. So the property manager, the landlord, the tenant, all of us should be in transparency and accountability. There's no hierarchy. You know, the human race really needs to get it together and understand there is no hierarchy. We are all in this together. And when people are living in shame, blame, and fear, the sharks of the world, like a shark can smell blood, can smell your shame, blame, and fear, and will remind you of why you're so lucky to be in the graces of this person who's going to give you an opportunity. You know? And what I tell people is rise above. Own your stuff. Clean up your side of the street. Say, yeah, absolutely, I did. I lost it. In fact, I'll share something with all the listeners right now. In 2011, I went bankrupt and short-sailed. 2008 is when everything crashed. I hung on for 3 years. I clawed. I tried, right? And then what happened is I went into shame, blame, and fear, and I fell into addiction, and I had nobody to talk to. And when I climbed out of it six years later, I'm over a 700 score. I own two houses, two cars, and $1 million brick-and-mortar business. So – thank you. So if I can do it, anybody can do it. But what I fear is that we don't have enough open conversations like this to really talk about where change comes from. Where does change come from? It comes from awareness. It comes from accountability. It comes from taking small, actionable steps each and every day until you self-actualize a new existence. And that's really what my book's all about.
No, I totally agree. God bless you, because I think we do, because spiritually, and when we, you know, we have so much going for us, and sometimes this materialistic part of the world can really take people down, and then there's so many other things going on out there that people don't talk about, you know, as far as why people take things a certain way, and then we have to be strong, and I love it. So I'm going to ask you, okay, we're going to turn over to your book. Before I do that, I want to ask another question, though. I loved the article that you put up on LinkedIn. It was like, why should you cooperate with your competition? And I kind of, when I connected to you, I was thinking, why should you connect with your competition, right? But your article was, can you tell us a little bit about why you say you should cooperate with your competition and what prompted that you to write that?
I don't think we're actually in competition. I think we definitely have a lot of egos that want to, you know, take up a lot of space and squish you down. But at the end of the day, you know, this is a human experience that we're going through. And the real estate life cycle, if you will, is a long process. It lasts our whole lives. So even if even if somebody ended up homeless for a brief moment, they're still part of the real estate life cycle. And what I find is that the people with the biggest egos want to somehow carve out that they are superior. And this is where my accountability, I think you even said, I'm going to take your line and start running with it. But you said, Cass, you sound like a pioneer with arrows in your back. And
right, I've been there. I know how that is.
Yeah. And,
you know
and
what
so
I mean?
What
from
I
years ago, yeah.
Is I'm pulling those arrows out of my back and I'm throwing them on the ground going, is that all you got? Like, we don't have to compete. We're all here to lift people up for the common good, I would hope. And I'm sorry, but the shadow side, the dark side, the narcissistic side, it is not sustainable.
Right.
And we're starting to see that side of business and the economy. And look at our earth. It's polluted, right? It is not sustainable to be acting that way.
No, and it's funny.
And so,
it's funny. I love that you say that. I love it because we're all equal, and everybody's living a different path. So they shouldn't go, "Why should I have done it? Why should I do it? You have this," or jealousy. You know, it's just amazing. And keeping the humble spirit is so important.
And my
my
competition is going to be making me offers on my companies when it comes time to sell. So why not getting good with me now? I'll tell you what, I'm keeping track of who I would and would not sell to. I'm watching the way people are being treated in the marketplace. I'm paying attention,
exactly.
And I want to compliment my competition because, in my opinion, we're all in it together, and it's a big market, right? I think we get so focused on our little tiny circle of influence. Like, I have like 1,600 people on my Facebook page. I mean, this is such a drop in the bucket of how big the population and the market opportunities are, right?
You're definitely a leader, you know, and it's important. I think competition is good for the soul. I've always said that, and I've never been afraid of telling them what I know. You know, when you're saying, what about this? This might work for you. What about that? You know, just not saying this is the way to do it, but just, you know, working with them to say, what do you, think about this? And I love that. You're definitely leading people in the right direction.
I study my competition because that's where curiosity comes in, right? So, I'm doing some higher consciousness learning right now, and it's a beautiful process to go through. But curiosity is one of the most fascinating things that you can jump into. This is also a chapter in my book. And so if I look at my competition and I stay curious, instead of being in judgment, right, I'm not passing judgment, curiosity is very innocent. It's like, what are you doing? How are you doing that? Oh, you're doing it really well? Or, oh, you're not doing it, right? Curiosity allows us to lean in and see what's possible. And another lesson I just learned is doubt. When we doubt if we can do it too, doubt is what actually leads us to curiosity, to say, okay, I don't know if I can, but I'm going to go find out. Right?
Exactly.
And so another emotion is envy or jealousy. Envy, to be envious or jealous is not necessary, but it's not necessarily a bad thing, because if we're envious of someone, then that's what we know we can lean into and start striving to become, right? Usually jealousy is, oh, you have something I want. Well, then curiosity kicks in and goes, how can I go get it? So it's just,
so if somebody
it's
takes it another
way.
Good.
Yeah, it's a different, it's a different mind bend, if you will. It's a different way of looking at it. So it doesn't have to be negative vibration. It doesn't have to hurt and destroy people. You can look at your competition and actually get a kick out of them and go do it better.
I always say it's good for the soul. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, okay, so tell us why you wrote the book, because it sounds like you definitely want to pass this forward to many, many people.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I plateaued. I had hit a point of success where my business was doing well, people were happy, and I felt that I wasn't, my voice wasn't loud enough, and that I had more to say, right? And so it was, writing a book can be very uncomfortable. You get to learn all sides of you you've never really explored, and it's incredibly vulnerable. It's an emotional throw up, if you will. It's like, oh, here I am, this is me. And so the experience alone was something that I wanted, you know, to get through. But then really what I did is I wanted to take the decades of toxic abuse and adversity and people who had marginalized me and say, how can I twist this around? How can I turn it around and show people that that we can use those experiences to our benefit, and we can also start to navigate those types of relationships so they never control us again. And so, if anything, it was a book to my 20-year-old self, right? It was like, hey, Cass,
I love
it. If I could go back and warn you something, here's a guide, here's a roadmap. And in the book, I include a vibrational scale that teaches people, you know, how to navigate in and out of low vibration people that are purposely holding you back, and how to cut away from those relationships faster. So that you can get back to growing, loving, and experiencing the best you possible.
You know, I love it because it's so, explain what you mean, okay, about the difference between stories and experiences in a person's life and how it relates to either success or it can keep you stuck.
Yeah, so I think we're all a bunch of storytellers, everybody. Everybody's a bunch of storytellers. So when I read the book Emotional Intelligence 2.0, they pointed out that we humans have 50,000 to 75,000 thoughts a day. And when you think about that, right, you can look up right now, you can see lights on, you can see things in your peripheral vision, you can hear background, right? We're processing 50,000 to 75,000 thoughts a day. I'm sure I'm on the high end, the 75,000 side. But anyway, that's just how my brain works. So, but then at the end of the day, what I notice is people would latch on to one or two situations and go, oh my gosh, let me tell you, this girl at work was so blah, 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 or this guy cut me off. And I thought to myself, out of 50,000 thoughts that went through your day, why are you sharing that one story? Why aren't you sharing the wins? Why aren't we talking about the positive things? Because like, it wasn't all doom and gloom. And so, so what I realized is that when we tell stories, we are actually telling something from our interpretation, and it's not necessarily the truth. And what if we can move into an experience and say, like, I just went for a run in Sun Valley. I went snowboarding and came in to make this call.
Right.
I could have sat there and said, oh, there were so many people on the lift, and the snow's a little packed today, and I could have created all this storytelling to give you an emotional experience so that maybe you can join me in that emotional experience on the slopes. Or I can go, yeah, I just had a really great experience or an average experience or a bad experience, and here's what I experienced, and we're moving on. So the difference between storytelling and experiences is that experiences don't attach emotion. Experiences are just what they are. It's just a moment in time. And we can ebb and flow out of moments in time if we stop attaching emotions and stories to them. And I just want to be, I just want to gather as many rad experiences as I can in my lifetime and help other people get out of their storytelling and gather as many experiences as they can. And they're not always going to be good, but we don't have to attach to them, and we don't have to make our experiences become our identity.
And that happens a lot of times. People get very stuck, and then it takes can take a couple years or years to get out of that unstuck place and to get unstuck. It's,
yeah, I mean,
well, you know, I want to ask you too. You created a vibrational scale, an exercise that helps people shift into clarity and greater happiness. Is that part of the yoga part of it, or is that more of a? Explain how you came up with it and what areas it covers.
Yeah, it came in a different couple different formats. Emotional Intelligence has a scale that they use to say how emotionally intelligent you are, kind of like an IQ, but it's an EQ rating. Power versus Force, which is another amazing book. I think it's by Stephen Hawkins, talks about vibrational scales. So you can, he does a vibrational scale from mass murders. You know, they're really, really all the way up to Gandhi and Mother Teresa, which are really, really high. And
fantastic.
Then we land somewhere in between. I really wanted to make my scale as simplified as possible. So I only go up to a +3 vibration and down to a -3. A 0 is a neutral. So, for example, right now I'm having a +1 experience with you. It's fun. I'm at a ski mountain. You know, it's Valentine's Day. Actually, I'm borderline +2. It feels good. And what happens is when people read my book and go through my coaching programs, we start talking in vibration. So before I hop on a call with you, I'll be like, hey, where are you at? And you're like, Cass, I'm at a -1. And I'm like, oh, maybe we should talk later. Like, I don't have to hear your story.
I gotcha.
I don't have to hear about, you know, you spilt your coffee and stubbed your toe and then a girl was mean to you. I don't have to go there with you.
Exactly.
You can just say, hey, babe, I'm at a -1. Can we talk when I'm neutral? And I'm like, absolutely, talk to you then. So it's a real quick guide to be able to get on the same page and say, are you picking up when I'm throwing down? Are you, you know? And also be careful, because if you're at a -1 vibration and you run into another -1 vibration person or a -2, let's just say you're going to start microaggressive, right? Microaggressions
right.
in the negative, and you're going to create more of that energy. So, at my property management company, if we have a tenant who comes in and they are emotionally unstable and they're vibrating at a -2, you can't have a -1 grumpy employee go talk to them. You got to go find somebody who's at a +1 or a +2 to counteract it and at least get it neutralized. And I know that might be hard for everyone to follow without reading the book, but
it
makes it really easy. And now all my friends, my family, all my clients, we talk in vibration. We talk in code. We got our own language.
you're at a -1. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Right? You just
exactly.
Said your relatives or something. That's so funny.
Or is there something +1 I can do to help you get out of that, right?
I love it. So that's, you talk about the micro shifts and microaggressions, and that's kind of like
yeah.
These little shifts, right? The little shifts that can, you know, a ship, you look at the rudder, you know, you turn it a little bit this way and it's going to make a big difference, right?
Exactly.
Explain that, how that works, kind of, yeah.
Yeah,
the
I
micro
think
shifts,
I got
micro.
A little, in my 30s, I got a little mad because I thought I was already going to be more successful than I was, and I had read all the Rags to Riches books, and I started to get, like, mad at the world, and I was like, it's lies, it's all lies. And I thought about companies like Nike, Just Do It, right? And it's just like, it sounds great, Just Do It, you know, it sounds great, just hustle, just grind, you got this. But
right.
I realized that, no, it's small little shifts in our thinking, in our actions, taking a phone call, showing up for an appointment, addressing a toxic person that we've never addressed before, all these tiny little shifts in our awareness and in our self-love starts to change our experience. And just like microaggressions, if I'm around somebody who constantly puts me down and reinforces all my weaknesses, and then, you know, and then I go out into the world and somebody's mean to me in that moment and I take it personally, these microaggressions also add up to a lot. And I think it's really important that we start being aware of our positive wins as much as we are sharing that which frustrates us. I think more people will share what agitates us, and we're less inclined to be our own number one cheerleader and say, guess what I did really rad today, or guess what something really sweet I did for a lady in line that wasn't expecting it. Like I think society somehow told us that we're not supposed to brag, or you shouldn't be proud of yourself, or you should be more humble.
Right.
And I disagree. I don't think anybody's going to celebrate me more than me. So I'm going to be my number one cheerleader. And I'm going to share
my wins. It sounds like you're really good at learning to live in the moment, right? Instead of saying, okay, my past brought me down here, or this future's brought. Of course, we have good memories and we learn from our past, but it sounds like you're really good at saying, hey, I am going to live in this moment, right? Instead of dwelling on
your past,
the negative and
our past
or.
Is gone. You know, our past is gone. It doesn't exist. It literally cannot affect our now unless we bring it in. And that was part of my yoga teaching, was surrender to the mat. Like when people go to yoga, and the problem with, you know, with Westerners is we've tried to turn it into exercise and cute yoga pants, but or hot, you know, I went to hot yoga and I sweated. Well, there was no hot yoga in ancient, you know, wisdom that's been passed down.
Right.
So, but what there is surrender, surrendering to the moment, laying on your mat and just being in that moment, in your body, in your mind, in your skin. And then when you are able to release and be present, everything starts to become more clear. You can separate from your stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, those are my stories. That's my past. That doesn't define this moment right here. And this is, you know, like I said, this is decades of me searching for a better way to live, but I don't think it has to be as difficult as we make it, and I don't think it has to be as expensive to have these ahas and these breakthroughs as a lot of personal development coaches and those types of people are kind of shoving down our throats at really high ticket pricing, which I've done, by the way. I've paid people $15,000, $10,000, $25,000 for lessons.
Right.
And then once I figured out I paid $15,000 for you to teach me happiness as a choice, I have a problem with that. I think we can teach people happiness as a choice for a lot less.
And, you know, it's a journey. It's an ongoing journey, right? Because we have different things. It really is, and it takes we do have paradigms, and it's just so interesting. Now, we're speaking to Cass Rose, and this is Natalie Mullenix on Realty Universal Radio. How can people reach you? I want to mention that before, because we're almost at the end. Can you believe an hour has almost gone by?
Yeah, that was really quick. Okay, so my full name is Cassandra Rose for social media purposes, and my book, I did use my nickname, which is Cass, and I am spelt with a K, so K-A-S-S, Rose, like the flower. You can go to CassRose.com. You'll find all my social media links there. You can order a copy of my book. We're not launching until the first day of spring, March 20th, but you can get a pre-launch copy at CassRose.com. You'll see links to Rent My Way there, and you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram. I'm an open book. I swear, I love, I laugh, I hurt. I share my authentic self with the world, and I'm proud to finally be the most authentic version of myself as I can be. And sometimes it's not a good fit, and people go, I don't like her, she's too much, and I'm cool with that. I wasn't always cool with that.
I love
today
it.
I'm cool with that because
Wonderful. Absolutely. We all have our own fingerprint for a reason, and you're just doing wonderful for everybody out there
and
too.
Let me teach you.
I Huh?
I want to tell you one quote that I learned from my teacher, and he said, if you are not your authentic self, and if you are not your authentic voice and your authentic self in your lifetime, then you truly never existed.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Right? It's heavy.
Absolutely.
But it's true.
There's only one of you, one of me, one of everybody. And I think that's, you know, we have one fingerprint for a reason. I think we come into this world, God gives us these amazing talents and gifts, and it's wonderful to be able to help others with it. I mentioned that to somebody before about we all have one fingerprint. And they said, no, twins have the same fingerprint, but they don't. They don't. And
they don't.
I don't think it's an accident at all that, you know, this has been so much fun. We have to get you back, too. And I've got a couple more questions, and we're almost at the end, and then you're going to be able to go skiing. I hope you have a beautiful Valentine's Day with your family.
Thank you so much.
And it's, identify how to people can suck your energy and how to remove them from your life. But why is it important to do that? Because sometimes people think, well, I can't. This is my family member. This is this. I have to put up with this. Why do you think that? Because it does suck your energy, and it's not good for our own psyche. Tell us what you think about that.
I'm going to use a skydiving analogy. So last year I started skydiving. I've got 17 jumps under my belt, and I now jump solo.
You're amazing.
And what I want to say is there's freedom on the other side of fear. So whenever we fear something, that's what we really need to lean into, because on the other side of that, it just feels so juicy. But here's what happened. For 38 years, I'm now 42, for 38 years, I touched the same hot burning stove over and over and over. And I thought if I was only pretty enough and cleaned myself up enough and worked hard enough that eventually these people would like me. And what I realized is it didn't matter if I was a mess or I was a success. It didn't change the way I was being treated. So sometimes we have to turn off the hot burning stove and go make a green smoothie instead. Feed ourselves with something else. The skydiving analogy is this. When you jump out of an airplane, you have 55 seconds of free fall. In that 55 seconds, you've got all types of things going through your head. But the number one thing is you need to be able to pull your chute, right? So you arch your back, you pull your chute, and your chute comes out. But not every time is it going to open up. So now you've got a whole new set of problems.
Go ahead.
And if it doesn't open up, or it's got a hole in it, or it's got twisted lines or something, and you can't fix it, you only get one shot, two shots. You don't get to struggle with your parachute all the way down to your death. You got one shot, two shots. If you can't correct it, you need to cut that chute away and pull your reserve. And that's how I feel with toxic people.
Got it.
With toxic people, you got to look at it, try to change that situation. If you can't, cut it. Cut that chute.
If it keeps happening, cut it, because you deserve to feel love and love yourself and not be pulled down like that, right? Because that's a great analogy, because it can pull you down to forever. It never changes. No.
Exactly.
That's a great analogy.
Turn off that hot burning stove and go make a green smoothie, because there are people out there that love you. You just got to go find the believers. Stop trying to convince people. Go find the believers.
I love it. I love it. You're awesome. And today's Valentine's Day, which, of course, we'll hear another time, so we don't always say the day it is. And many, many people are alone on Valentine's Day. And, you know, go get yourself some chocolate if you can eat, or a flower, or a rose, and just do it for yourself, right? Not waiting for the outsiders I love it. I love it. Wow, this has been fantastic. You're amazing. We have to get you back. We'll have to do some other ones, too, because
I love what you're doing.
I love it, love it, love it. So tell us the last takeaway, and then we are going to sign off.
This has been an absolute joy. I just want to say that when we lean into that which scares us the most, that's when the growth happens. So just like a little seed that's trying to bust its plant through the hard shell, that once it breaks through and it sees the light, that's when we start to grow. So there's going to be people who want to squash your seed, drown your seed, you know, displace your seed. And it's tough to break through. But once you break through, that's when you get to sprout new beginnings and new life. And this was my first radio show, my first podcast. So I just wanted to say thank you for helping this
you
little
awesome.
Seed start to see new light. So this is just the beginning.
You did awesome. Thank you. Thank you. It's been so much. It's so awesome. You're amazing. And God bless you.
Thank you.
And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.